English translation by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Vasu, I know that within your mind what you have desired in the days of yore, when the Vasus and other demigods responsible for expanding the universal affairs performed sacrifices. You particularly desire to achieve my association. This is very difficult for others to obtain, but I award it unto you. Okay, so the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Okay, it's not average size purport. Uddhava is one of the eternal associates of the Lord, and a plenary portion of Uddhava was one of the eight Vasus in the days of yore. The eight Vasus and the demigods in the upper planetary system, who are responsible for the management of the universal affairs, performed a sacrifice in the days of yore, desiring to fulfill their respective ultimate goals of life. At that time, an expansion of Uddhava, acting as one of the Vasus, desired to become an associate of the Lord. The Lord knew this because he is present in the heart of every living entity as Paramatma, the super consciousness. In everyone's heart, there is there's the representation of the super consciousness who gives memory to the partial consciousness of every living entity. The living entity, as partial consciousness, forgets incidents of his past life, but the super consciousness reminds him how to act in terms of his past cultivation of knowledge. Bhagavad Gita confirms this fact in various ways. Gita 4:11 and Savasya Chaham Hidi Sani Visto Matasimiti Ganam Apohanam Cha Gita 15:15. Everyone is at liberty to desire as he likes, but the desire is fulfilled by the Supreme Lord. Everyone is independent to think or desire, but the fulfillment of one's desire depends on the supreme will. This law is expressed as man proposes, God disposes. In the days of yore, when the demigods and Vasus perform sacrifice, Uddhava, as one of the Vasus, desire to enter into the association of the Lord, which is very difficult for those busy in empiric philosophical speculation or fruitive activities. Such persons have practically no information of the facts and becoming an associate of the Lord. Only the pure devotees can know, by the mercy of the Lord, that the personal association of the Lord is the highest perfection of life. The Lord assured Uddhava that he would fulfill his desire. It appears that when the Lord informed him by his indication to Uddhava, the great sage Maitreya finally became aware of the importance of entering into the association of the Lord. So we'll do the verse, read the English verse again. O Vasu, I know that from within your mind what you desired in the days of yore, when the Vasus and other demigods responsible for expanding the universal affairs performed sacrifices. You particularly desired to achieve my association. This is very difficult for others to obtain, but I award it unto you. Om Gyanam Tiriram Dasya Gananjala Shalakaya Daksho Om Manitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Garamayam Dadati Svapadantikam He Krishna Kruna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namustate Tatsa Kanchana Godangi Vade Vindavanishvare Vishabhanu Sute Devi Vanam Yami Hari Priye Vanta Kalpada Tugubascha Kripo Sinbu Devacha Patitanan Pabanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gurvani Facharine Nivasesha Shunyavadi Vashachare Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So let's look at some of the points here in the purport, of course. So a lot of this revolves around Uddhava. Uddhava, very important character, actually, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If anyone was to resemble Krishna in appearance, it was Uddhava, to the degree, actually, that even the gopis of Vrindavan mistook Uddhava to be Krishna. Even though their upbringing was quite different, as I'll mention a bit later, still, it means Uddhava was a very divine and beautiful looking, actually, as well as Krishna is. So a very auspicious person. But in a previous life, actually, before he appeared on the earth 5,000 years ago to participate in Krishna's transcendental leela, he was, as we learn here, he was one of the Vasus, and in the heavenly planets, where they were performing sacrifices to the Lord. And at that moment, Uddhava, who was then known as something else, was thinking, oh, I wish I had the association of the Lord. I really desire that. And the Lord knew, because he had access to the Paramatma, not in his just heart, but everybody's heart. He knew his desire is sincere. So therefore, when he takes birth again, he'll take birth in his original spiritual form and participate in the leela here. So of course, this is the context, really, of this, as I understand it. So a little bit about Uddhava, because one thing I personally, anyway, one thing I've found was that sometimes in Bhagavatam you've got conversations within conversations within conversations. Have you noticed that? And one of those is the conversation between Vidura and Vaitreya and so forth. So for me, with my small brain, I actually struggle sometimes to know what conversation is actually going on. Especially if you open the Bhagavatam randomly, it's quite hard. You sort of have to go back a few verses or even chapters to say, what's the context here? So I thought I would do that today a little bit by looking a little bit into the characters that are present here. So Uddhava was actually... most sources would say that Uddhava was actually, in his birth, as it were, was related to Krishna. He was his cousin. His father, of course, is Vasudeva's brother. But he was also a friend and a counsellor of Krishna. And he wasn't brought up as a cowherd boy as Krishna was, but he was a city educated, as it were. He was like that. But he was taught the process of yoga and bhakti directly by Krishna himself. So even though he was a friend and counselor of Krishna, it seems that Krishna himself was obviously teaching him also the principles of bhakti, because Uddhava knew who Krishna was. Not everybody 5,000 years ago knew or accepted who Krishna was. So, of course, Uddhava was one of those who knew exactly who he was and relished his association. He was a scholar from the city, Uddhava, but he was, let's have a look, he was... full of bhakti, in many ways personified bhakti as well. But he's he's a very, very important character. And in one sense, in Prabhupada's purport here as well, it's in kind of contrast to Maitreya. No, of course, disrespect to a great, great sage. But actually Maitreya was not known until slightly later on to have purely embraced the principles of bhakti. In other words, he was... tinged at the time, anyway, with a little bit of jnana, a little bit of karmakanda. He was very learned, obviously, and austere, and all these qualities. But actually, he was senior to Uddhava, but was not senior to him spiritually, as it were. So we read about Maitreya was actually one of the disciples of Maharaj Parasara, who was the father of Vyasadeva himself. So therefore, Vyasadeva and Maitreya were actually friends and associates. They had respect for each other. They were peers, as it were, in the sage world. he was a great, say, learned scholar, although, like I mentioned, he wasn't recognized as a pure devotee, because to be a pure devotee, you have to, in our tradition, you have to actually imbibe and live and understand about the principles of bhakti, and understand that bhakti is the highest rung on the yoga ladder. It is not sentiment, it is love and service. Though, of course, this is higher than anything. Although both Uddhava and Maitreya were great souls, the Lord's attention, as I referred to, was more on Uddhava because of his actual, you know, devotion. The Lord reciprocates with his devotees on the basis of transcendental love and not on the basis of philosophical knowledge or fruitive activities. So, of course, another important personality in this leaders, of course, is Vidura. Because, of course, it is Vidura that was sent by Uddhava, actually, to take instructions from Maitreya. Does anyone know why the reason for that was? Imagine Vidura, who, by the way, of course, was the prime minister of the Kuru dynasty, and was forced in some ways, at some point anyway, to be the prime minister of Duryodhana, because Vidura was the prime minister of whoever happened to sit on the throne. Just like Bhishma had made a vow to serve whoever sat on the throne of Hastinapur, Vidura was the prime minister, found himself being the prime minister to Duryodhana, but of course things got out of hand, as I'm sure you know. Those who are remotely familiar with the Mahabharata will know that things got badly out of hand due to Duryodhana's very great stubbornness. And Vidura was you know, always saying to Duryodhana, they were related, of course, don't do this, don't go for this war, don't be so stubborn, just give the Pandavas this, give them some villages, whatever you have to do, but let's not have this big war. What's the point? But did Duryodhana listen? No, of course not. So in the end, of course, Vidura just walked out on the situation, as we all did. So, but Vidura was born between Vyasadeva and Parishrami, a handmaiden to the queens of Ambika and Ambalika. And that's, in other words, he wasn't, his mother was a handmaiden rather than royalty. And this is why he could not sit on the throne himself. And this is why, ultimately, Duryodhana didn't have a high regard for him. Or at least, when Duryodhana got very, very angry with Vidura, because he kept siding with the Pandavas and kept saying, listen to Krishna, listen to him, we can avoid this war. And Krishna was just Krishna went there as well as an attempt to imbibe some diplomacy into the situation. Look, let's try and sort this out. We don't have to have this war. And Vidura was siding with Krishna and everything like that, of course. And in the end, Duryodhana lost it. Who are you? You think you are? You're just the son of your mother was a handmaiden, and you were just there because you needed it. I mean, look at me. In comparison, why should I listen to you? You're not true royalty. You shouldn't even be here. And you know, and that really hurt Vidura. And at that point, I think he wanted out. Especially, not just because of that, the dent to his ego, perhaps, because he didn't have much ego. But it was mainly because he disagreed with this upcoming war. And who can blame him, really? But he was, of course, deeply, deeply respected by devotees, Vidura. Vidura repeatedly advised everyone in the Kuru court. In the end, of course, he resigned and had nothing to do with the war, did not take part in it or anything like that. But here, in the context of Maitreya and everything like that, this was after actually Krishna had left this planet. At this point, Vidura is quite senior at this point. And this is what happened. You see, Vidura was much more senior to Uddhava. Uddhava actually looked quite young, what looking like Krishna and everything, for a start. But in terms of age, there was a generation gap. Whereas in the context, Maitreya was senior to Vidura. And that's why when Vidura, on his pilgrimage and his travels, found Uddhava by the banks of Yamuna in Vrindavan, he wanted to be his disciple. But Uddhava said, you know what? I may have more bhakti. I may have more knowledge, perhaps in some way, than Maitreya. But you have to go to Maitreya, and go to him and accept him as your guru, because I'm junior to you, and that's not the culture. Which is quite interesting. An interesting aspect of Vedic culture is that the knowledge is transformed from senior to junior, even if the senior is less qualified than someone else. In this case, which is quite interesting, because Uddhava was actually aware of the saying that, you know, you usurp or you disrespect your seniors, then all inauspiciousness comes your way. But it's not how things are done. It's not how things are accepted in Vedic culture, which is interesting. Well, now I want to rejoin that again. So even though Uddhava was actually divine, born as a pure devotee in his last life and so forth, being a higher birth in some ways than Maitreya, nevertheless, he followed this etiquette, which gives us an interesting idea. I think the word etiquette is there. It's, for example, we have to respect our seniors, senior members of the family, senior members of society, senior devotees. But even if there's some lacking or perceived lacking from the point of view of the younger devotees in a senior, one should not openly or publicly, or certainly not, correct that senior. One has to go to one of the senior's peers and deal with it in that way. Because it can be very humiliating for the senior person, and it's very difficult often for senior people to listen in that way. But I'll get back into that, because I think that's an interesting and an important cultural topic. But I just wanted to talk a little bit also about the Vasus, if I may. Because again, to understand this verse in its context, we need to know more about the different characters, if you like, that are described. So they were the children of Manu, Dharmadev, and of course Vasu. That's why they're called the Vasus. And she herself was a daughter of Daksha. Daksha, of course, being one of the progenitors of mankind, very senior character. He also has ego problems, actually, as we would. In fact, he ended up with the head of a goat for offending Lord Shiva, who incidentally was senior to him. So that's another matter. But so Daksha was himself known for his passionate nature, but he was also a very important progenitor. One of those daughters, as I said, was Vasu. So they were known, his children were known as the eight Vasus, or translates as Vasu, bright, luminous ones, the illuminated ones, the Astavasus. Of course, they also were attendants of Indra, and they also became attendants when they of Lord Vishnu himself, as I think we kind of learned. They also were known, as we read in the purport here, they were known as controllers of the elements. In fact, they're known by different names, and sometimes when it's listed, that the names differ slightly. But the main point is that they were administrators of the universe, very senior demigod positions, ultimately. The sky and wind and air and so forth like that. But of course, interestingly, a very important Vasu who took birth on... Well, the eight Vasus took birth on the earth. A very important one, I think we know very well. Who was that? And he did take part in the Kurukshetra war. It was Bhishma. Someone else, not unlike actually Vidura, actually, who disagreed with the king, the emperor, Duryodhana, but was obliged through culture, actually, in some ways. He made this vow, of course, not only never to get married, but actually to always serve whoever sat on the throne. It turned out to be, obviously it's all Leela, it was meant to happen, but that's a vow which you could say, well, is dependent on, should be dependent on who actually sits on the throne. That kind of, we know the history, we know the story. But Bhishma actually was also one of the Vasus in a previous life. And the Vasus were cursed, I think it was by Vishishta Muni, I think it was, yeah, Vishishta, who had this beautiful Kamadhenu wish-fulfilling cow. But the eight Vasus conspired, and they said, oh no, let's steal the cow, because that's a beautiful, beautiful cow. And all of one's desires are fulfilled and provided by this celestial cow. Not a normal cow, a very special cow. But it was actually Bhishma, I think his name when he was a Vasu was Prabhasa, I think it was. And he was the one that actually physically took the cow, stole it from Vasishtha. The other seven Vasus were interesting, you know, they were there, of course, egging him on and participating. So they're all guilty as charged. But of course, Prabhasa, who was the one who actually did it physically. So Vasishtha, being great Muni knew instantly who had taken or what had happened. So he cursed the Vasus. I curse these stealing Vasus. They must take birth on the earth. So of course the story is they took birth. Who was their mother? It was Mother Ganga. We know this story again. We're going back, I don't know when it was, many thousands of years at this point. But all of them were killed by their own mother in the river Ganges very soon after birth, one after the other, apart from one, which of course we now know as Bhishma, Bhishma Dev. He had to be on the earth for a little bit longer than the others because of the nature of Vasishtha's curse. So you imagine how this must have been for Mother Ganges personification to do this, how that must have felt. And at the time, her husband did not understand. He wasn't allowed to say anything. He was forbidden for rejecting this, but he made a vow to accept whatever she did. He wouldn't interrupt. So she killed the first seven Vasus, and that is very difficult to understand, very difficult to accept at the time. But we have to understand it was part of this curse. It was meant to happen, and these are simply demigods taking birth temporarily in human form. So often in life, we especially when we're dealing with the Mahabharata, actually, something will happen. We think, why did that happen? Why did that have to happen? Why did he do this? Why did she do that? And often it's relating to a former lifetime or a former curse or something that, again, was by Krishna's will, was meant to happen. The Kurukshetra war was inevitable. It was meant to happen, ultimately, bad as it was. I just wanted to read a little bit about here. I mentioned earlier about how Uddhava, although Vidura realized Uddhava's great position and closeness to Krishna and his ability to imbibe and to give over highest spiritual knowledge, still he instead traveled to the Himalayas to take the darshan of Maitreya Rishi. Shishidada Goklanan ki jai. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shishi Gornitai ki jai. So there's a nice purport that Prabhupada writes elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, which relates to this point I was making about why Vidura was obliged to turn to his physical senior, as it were, Maitreya, as opposed to the junior Uddhava. Prabhupada writes here, although one may be well versed in the transcendental science, one should be careful about impertinently surpassing a greater personality. According to scriptural injunction, one should be very careful of transgressing etiquette, because by doing so, one loses his duration of life, his opulence, fame, and piety, and blessings from the world. To be well versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Uddhava, being well aware of these technicalities of transcendental science, advised Vidura to approach Maitreya Rishi instead. Vidura wanted to accept Uddhava, but Uddhava did not accept because of this principle. Especially because Maitreya was present nearby, and it was also a convenience. The rule is that in presence of a higher personality or senior personality, one should not be very eager to impart instructions, even if one is competent and well-versed. So Uddhava decided to take an elderly person, like Vidura to Maitreya, another elderly person. So this is very, very interesting, actually. I'm sure you would all agree with that. It seems that an aspect or an ingredient of bhakti is this culture. The passing down from senior to junior, the principle of listening, respecting one's elders, listening to granddad, you know, whatever it may be. And because what they have, which juniors don't have, is life's experiences too. And life's experiences and can bring wisdom, if properly channeled, you know, within reason, of course. And from wisdom can come bhakti, or bhakti presented in a way which is appropriate for the disciple as well. Because sometimes just cold philosophy on its own perhaps someone who knows many, many verses one after the other has memorized something parrot fashion. It may be impressive, but for that, say a child was able to memorize parts of the Bhagavatam, but for that child to instruct his own grandfather or his own father, it's just not right. It doesn't sit well culturally. Because there's so many other aspects of life which those verses and purports relate to, practical aspects. For example, if someone is imagine an 8-year-old child, or anybody really, a 15-year-old child, let's say, instructing a married man on married life. Where's your experience? You know, what do you base it on? So there may be some truth. The information may be there, but this is actually tinged with gyan. Because gyan means knowledge, you know, book knowledge, basically. And this is what Maitreya had a lot of, actually. Book knowledge. But book knowledge alone, without the cultural aspect I described, and certainly without the bhakti, isn't going to penetrate the heart of the disciple. So this is an important aspect here, which I think features prominently in the verse. I remember, actually, when I was youngish. I was about 21, and I was quite new to Krishna consciousness. And I, of course, as you do, I was kind of quite fired up, you know, you want to kind of deliver everybody, you want to deliver your family. But quite quickly, as soon as I started telling Nan, my grandmother, about Krishna, she's like, you know, you could tell it was a struggle for her, being from another tradition and for many, many years, generations before I was even born. It's difficult. It's not the right thing to do. But what she did was, in response, she took me to this, call it a Sangha group. It was some type of local group in a Cornish village. Because she had this group which discussed, it was like New Age kind of thing. It's quite a popular kind of in parts of Cornwall. So it was an elderly, retired person's kind of New Age group. And she said, you'll go well with them, I think. So whatever you do, bring in your saffron robes and your shaven head and walk through this Cornish village with me, because that's going to shock everybody. And sure enough, I was walking with my nan, who was kind of proud of her, I guess, quite eccentric son, perhaps. And there's these people peering through the net curtains. Oh my God, it's a Buddhist monk. Or it's a Buddhist monk, you know, whatever they said and however they said it. So we went to this group, and of course there was a few more people that turned up that week, which I think was my nan's plan all along. So I gave a presentation on Srila Prabhupada and the Gita, and it was a basic understanding. But of course the average participant of that group was about 70, and I was 21. So automatically you have this senior-junior dynamic. So automatically they're just going like this. And at the end, and he gets his pipe out and he puts the tobacco in his pipe. And he goes, "Very interesting," he says, "but whatever you do in your religious path, avoid extremes." Avoid extremes, yes. And I remember thinking, at the time I was thinking, he doesn't accept Krishna's lotus feet, or, you know, whatever I was conceived at the time. But it wasn't until many years later, avoid extremes. Just two words from an elderly gentleman with a pipe, okay? Avoid extremes. Oh, he's smoking. I can't listen to him. He's got nothing to say. No. Because he had 70 years of life experience. Avoid extremes. And what he was saying was, look, you're a young man. You've got your life ahead of you. Don't be artificial. Be realistic. Think about your longer term future. Take on this path, that's fine, you're happy with it, you know. But one, don't expect everybody to be the same as you. Two, expect that life will have its challenges. You'll go through different phases in your life, different ashrams, different varnas, whatever. And just those two words from a senior gentleman, even though he wasn't following the four regs or whatever, actually stays with me today. So this is a good example sometimes how life experiences, I mean, and when it's coupled with actual, you know, like Prabhupada, for example, you know, the best example. Life's experiences coupled with transcendental knowledge is such a powerful package. such a powerful package and an important reason, the kind of, it gives you the idea of the kind of impact that Srila Prabhupada had on his disciples. The average age of perhaps people in ISKCON in the late 60s was something like 22. There was something around that figure. College students and hippie dropouts and intellectuals and so forth, all in their early 20s, late teens. Prabhupada didn't even reach America until he was over 70, you know. So it wasn't just one generational difference, it was two generations. And he was Prabhupada with all this knowledge, this history, this culture, and life's experiences, which is interesting. Because a lot of his, I mean, Shamsundar Prabhu, we all know, or at least heard of Shamsundar Prabhu. Of course, he did so much for the UK Yatra and for getting George Harrison into Krishna consciousness and so forth. But Shamsundar said one thing that he struck him about Prabhupada, apart from everything, you know, the spiritual aspect, he couldn't, business people in India and were also trying to try and fool him or trick Prabhupada. Sometimes there'd be people who would, a good example was Mr. Nair, actually, in Bombay, present-day Mumbai, who would try and trick money out of ISKCON or trick land out of ISKCON or, you know, send a blank check or there'd be some. But Prabhupada was actually a very good judge of character and was nobody's, he was not naive, in other words. Prabhupada knew about every penny that was going on in and out of the BBT. He didn't want to see a waste of Krishna's money either. And remember, Prabhupada just started off with about $7 or something like that it was, which he actually kept, never ended up spending it. The point here that Shamsundar Prabhu recounted was that is because Prabhupada actually he was a businessman. He was, you know, he was in the pharmaceutical industry. He was living in Calcutta and Allahabad and so forth, and so had these life experiences. Which was enabled him or helped him. Of course, knowledge of the English language, went to Scottish Churches College. So he had all this information, if you like, together with, of course, you know, the actual, you know, the Krishna conscious package. And this is what, of course, as well as his disciples, this was the base, the foundation of ISKCON in many ways. That Prabhupada decided not to stay in the Radha Damodar temple or to stay in the forest or the Himalayas or whatever, but to actually bring Krishna consciousness around the world. And he, like I said before, his life experiences, I think, was a great practical element to that. So I'll just finish off, just two more minutes, if I may. We learned, did we not, it was mentioned three times, once in the verse, and at least twice in the purport, the days of yore. The days of, okay, what does the days of yore mean, Prabhu? The days of yore. This is actually kind of an English expression that Prabhupada uses, the days of yore. Back in the day, when I were your age, you know, as a senior would say to a junior, yeah. The days of yore is defined as, you know, well, basically, a long time ago, but it means an unspecific. Specifically, it means a specific long time ago in the ancient times, but it's not necessary to know exactly when. In the days of yore, we did this, we did that, hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago, basically. So, in the days of yore, Prabhupada, in the verse, it's being unspecific. At some point in the past, the Vasus were often sacrificed to Lord Vishnu. Just like, of course, that would happen also in the Treta Yuga on this planet, where the process of God realization was through sacrifice. In the days of yore, it basically means a jolly long time ago. On another planet, it seems, as well, in the demigod realms. So I find that quite a fascinating thing. But we know what it means. It is a kind of a typical English expression, but we all know what it means, you see. That's the thing, in the days of yore. So just to conclude, there's another thing as well which I haven't touched on, which is in the purport about the role of the what Prabhupada calls the super consciousness, the super soul, the Paramatma in everyone's heart, I like that, super consciousness. not just consciousness, but super consciousness. You know, the connection with the Lord himself. Simultaneous oneness and difference between us and the Lord. So, Prabhupada, in another purport, actually writes that the Lord knew about Uddhava's desires because he's present in the heart of every living entity as the Paramatma, the super consciousness. In everyone's heart, there is a representation of the super consciousness who gives memory to the partial consciousness of every living entity. The living entity forgets incidents of his past life, but the super consciousness reminds him of how to act in terms of his past cultivation of knowledge. Interesting. In other words, we don't remember our past lives, but the Lord does. This is actually what Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita as well. You know, you don't remember your last life, but I remember all of mine. So similarly, in the form of the super soul knows what was going on in our last life. And a good example of this, you know, was the fact that sometimes we may not have, let's say in the last life, I don't remember my last life. I mean, maybe I was regressed once, but that's another story. But most of us, we don't have any idea of our last life. And that's how things are. But sometimes, you know, devotees, sometimes they get instantly attracted. I mean, notice that to certain things. I think even Mozart could play the piano. You know, no one can understand why, as a child, he knew how to play the piano. There's something coming on from a previous life that sometimes manifests, even subconsciously or knowingly. Even our attraction to Krishna consciousness, or our natural, liking, natural attraction to Krishna. Oh, that seems right. Touch the Bhagavad Gita, listen to kirtan, or listen to a Bhagavad class, or certainly eat prasadam. And sometimes devotees, it's not just a case of, oh, I like the prasadam, I like the chanting, I like Prabhupada's books. I think it's not spoken about often, but this is what I think, that a lot of it may be because from a previous life we had something as well. Often that's not the case, but often it is, where it's the sense of, I recognize this from somewhere before, but I can't quite put my finger on it. But this is somehow right, to sit there with prasadam or with the tali and eat with your hand. It seems natural, you know, because it's Vedic, you know. And the other way around, it's sitting there eating with a knife and fork on a table seems unnatural. Which is kind of interesting, because when you think about it, in our previous lives, we were, most of us have been human beings perhaps from 100 centuries ago. In other cultures as well, perhaps more dharmic than the Western culture of the modern world. And, you know, and this thing, the only thing that's new for us is technology, really. Mobile phones, and that's all kind of new. But in most of our previous lives, we weren't exposed to the same degree of technology that we have now. And that's why technology is very dangerous, actually. We don't know how to deal with it. The human brain doesn't know how to regulate it. So we have to be we don't reject technology or our mobile phones, but we engage it in Krishna's service. And I think that's my final point. It's very important that we engage it in Krishna's service. Or as my nan would say, to round things off, as my nan would say, I don't trust all those phones and stuff like that. I just want to talk to people person to person. That's how we did things in my day, in the days of yore, you know. Yeah, so in other words, we should not let Zoom or other technologies destroy our personal qualities. I think that's also something that can be lost in the modern age, that the personal philosophy means personal interaction between devotees as well is important. Anyway, we've covered a lot there. Anything someone would like to add? It's all been said, though, I think, hasn't it? Okay, one point, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
You asked a question, but you didn't answer it, or you didn't ask us to answer it, was why did Vidura was sent to Maitreya?
Right. Oh, yes. Okay, so I think I did, but let me say it again. So the main reason why Vidura was sent to Maitreya was because Maitreya was more senior. Was the senior of the two, whereas Uddhava was junior to Vidura. Vidura at this point, this is like in the latter stages of Mahabharat period, where by this time Vidura is elderly at this point. He's given up all his politics. He gave up on the politics. At this point, he's a pilgrim. And Uddhava says, it's not right for you to hear from me because I'm a generation below you. But Maitreya, he can tell you. Just get the microphone, yeah.
There's something called Maya Dambetikram, and Uddhava knew this, that if he surpasses a senior, then like you said in your class,
yeah, it's lifespan bad.
Lifespan is reduced, priority is taken away, you can't have the higher planets.
Yeah.
So Uddhava was in knowledge of that, and Maitreya was also met Krishna, and he had the same instruction.
Yeah.
Krishna came to Uddhava. So if a senior devotee is around, you have the same knowledge, you have to give respect to the senior first.
Yes, that's very good. That's very good. And I think I did cover that in the class. But it's interesting. It's an interesting thing because a young devotee on book distribution, what is the lesson? So that they've got their books. Oh, no, there's someone senior. Can I sell them a book? Can I tell them about Krishna? Of course, the answer is yes. But I think that how younger people interact with older people, even when preaching, I think, should be taken into consideration. You know, sometimes preaching techniques may have to differ according to your audience. I think that's kind of common sense. But it's always been there in the history of humankind as well. Okay, one final point, because it's we're getting late now.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
So there's an aspect. So what you said about how that person, when you went with your grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
What was it he said again?
He said, oh, yeah, I'll do it again. So he had a pipe. And he was putting tobacco in his pipe and lighting it with a match. He said, because it was like Q&A after my presentation. He went, interesting. You know, he said, avoid extremes. And at the time I was thinking, oh, yeah, he's in Maya or something like that. He doesn't want to chant Hare Krishna. He wants to... You know, he's comfortable. And to be honest with you, sometimes when people are that age, they can't change. And it's very difficult for them to change. But what they can do, the least they can do is pass on instruction. Even if he wasn't qualified in terms of maybe whatever it was, in terms of his regulatory principles or something. But actually, he had experience of life. Avoid extreme. And religious extremism has no place in Krishna consciousness. You know. Yeah, I don't think.
So on that point, is it just a matter of sharpening our hearing capability to be able to hear from maybe the Paramatma within everybody's heart?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You can even find, aside from the senior junior issue, you can even find gold in a dirty place. There was once when I think someone said something to myself, actually, and I can't remember the context now, but it wasn't recent. And it was basically they were correcting me on something. But that person who was correcting me, I think, was a non-devotee or something like that. But afterwards, I thought, actually, no, that's the Paramatma. Let's bring this round into the purport here. The super consciousness was talking through that individual. And we have to remember that as well. We can't, even if they're junior to us or whatever, we can't say, I'm not going to listen to anybody. Sometimes Krishna may be trying to tell us something through even a pet dog or something like that. They may be trying to teach us something. We have to be open to that, even if superficially they're not qualified to do so. It may be that, you know what that person said? Maybe that was a lesson there. I think we have to be able to do that. But generally, the principle is that the information or correction goes from senior to junior, in general. Okay, thank you. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.